Welcome to the Philacrosophy Podcast, where host and lacrosse expert Jamie Monroe will do what he does best, talk about lacrosse. Each episode will provide listeners with education, insights, stories, and lessons about the lacrosse world. We will discuss current events, coaching, philosophies, and college lacrosse recruiting. Now let's get started with your host, Jamie Monroe.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the Philacrosophy Podcast. Very excited to welcome Colin Monroe, the offensive coordinator and assistant coach at Colgate University. Colin, very fired up to have you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I know I've gotten a lot of people telling me over the past couple of years that I need to jump on, and they've been waiting. So hopefully there's some excited people out there.
Well, it's kind of funny for me because this is like the first time I actually know your entire journey before I ask the question of, hey, Colin, you've had a pretty unique and fun lacrosse journey as a player and a coach. Why don't you take us through that a little bit, and then we'll dive deep into all kinds of discussions of your mentors and what you learned along the way.
Yeah, sweet. So obviously my journey is still a little new here as a coach, but just kind of going through back as a player is awesome. So obviously started out, you were my coach, and I was playing little rec league, growing up in Colorado, hanging out in the DU sidelines, which was pretty sweet, which was kind of the real start to my love for lacrosse and seeing those teams compete and really get after it. So that was always awesome. And then, getting into box, I started going up playing box at 11 years old, and I stayed with my grandparents in Niagara on the Lake, Ontario, my mom's parents. So that was pretty awesome to spend 5 summers up there. I was coached by Sean Allen, who I think is one of the best box lacrosse coaches. He has a huge impact on me as a career, and stuff he taught me back then, I'm still learning now. So went through that. And about that time, I was getting into high school, Mountain Vista High School, where I played for Coach Jake Herman and you. So get a great staff there for a couple of years of high school, and you finish it up as my head coach, so that was awesome as well. And then about the same time, I was over playing junior lacrosse out in Coquitlam. So I played 5 summers of junior A in Coquitlam. I played for Pete Tellis and Pat Coyle, and two of, I think, some of the best coaches out there. I think unbelievably smart. Pat Coyle's won at every level. He won as a player in the NLL, coach in the NLL, senior A. So he's won pretty much everything he's played. So learned a ton from him just about mindset and culture and how to kind of keep guys working hard. And while I was doing that, went off to UNC to play for Coach Bresci, Coach Metzbauer, Coach Unterstein at Carolina. So that was awesome. Spent 2 years with those guys and really learned a lot and made awesome friends out there and loved my time at Chapel Hill, and decided I needed a change, and ended up going to Georgetown, where I played for Coach Phipps, Coach Warren, and Coach Shriver, and that was awesome as well. And getting the chance to be in two premier programs and learn from both of them, and two completely different schools too as a player, one being down south and bigger school in the ACC, and then a small school in the city with a really good education. Just kind of getting a feel of both those schools I thought was awesome for me, and different ways programs operated, and just kind of led me into my coaching. So after I graduated from Georgetown, I spent the summer playing senior A out in Langley. So did that and played with some unbelievable players on that team, with Curtis Dixon and Dane Dobie, Robert Church, Frankie Filiano, some really, really high-end players. Were learned a ton, had a great summer out there. Played in the Man Cup, lost in game 7, which was too bad, but really learned a lot. And then right after that summer ended, I went over to start working for Coach Bobby Benson at Providence College. Worked under him as a volunteer, and Casey Broderson and Carol Kennedy, and we had an awesome staff. And first year head coach and brand new to the program. So we had an awesome time kind of navigating some stuff and figuring it out, and really learned a ton from them. And then this past summer, I took the job for Coach Carwick as the offensive coordinator at Colgate. So just kind of getting going up here in Hamilton, and it's only a couple of snow so far. So feeling pretty good about that.
Awesome. Hey, let's take a little bit of a deeper dive into box. And I want to start, my first question is, you started playing box across for Shawnee in St. Catharines as a second year peewee, 5 years, peewee, bantam, bantam, midget, midget. What, how would you sort of describe the differences between Canadian box lacrosse as a youth player and what it would be like to grow up playing lacrosse only in the US as a field player? What are some of the things that you learned? What are the, things that you took that you maybe even take to this day?
Yeah. I would say that the one thing that's pretty cool is you kind of grow up and it's everyone's playing offense and defense. So you're playing both ways at a young age. And so you can kind of get that, but you also, you play so many games up there. It's funny. Like we barely practiced and all we did was play games. So we were up there, you play a couple games a week. And as I'm sure you remember, we played our own zone a bunch. So I played against Six Nations in Burlington. It feels like every week and play Six Nations A team, Six Nations B team. But you really get some strong rivalries up there doing that. And you play against the same kids all the way up in a lot of times, which I think is a little different. And then at least it wasn't Colorado. It might be that way in other states, but it wasn't quite the same of that in Colorado. So I would just say the biggest thing was tons of games. Everything's uber competitive. You go, cause you play with a 2 year age grab. So you play, peewee as a younger peewee and an older peewee, a major and a minor. So playing, so you're always trying out for teams and it's tough to make teams and you got good players coming up and below, no matter what center you're in, it's never a given. So, yeah, I'd say the biggest things are more games, more kind of rivalries that you get all the way up into junior when it's uber competitive and you're 21-year-old playing against the same kid you're playing against at 11 years old is pretty cool. So, yeah.
It's pretty crazy. Actually, you know, you look back to all those 98s, you know, in Ontario that you're playing against Burlington and Six Nations and how many of those guys are playing pro now? A lot, right?
Yeah, a lot of them. It's cool. And I'm still buddies with a handful of guys that I used to play against, whether it's Tahoga or Ryan Lanchberry or some of those guys who played in our zone that we were playing with at 11 years old. We just ended up playing against each other all the way through into Minto Cups and stuff like that. But we're still buddies to this day. So that's pretty cool as well.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, it's so fun going to box lacrosse games too. As a dad, it was a blast to go watch you guys. And then you made the move out west, played 1 year of intermediate, which is really why you went there, was to be able to play in an intermediate league, which doesn't exist anymore. It used to be there was a 17 and 18 year old league, whereas, you know, midget was 15 and 16. You know, in Ontario, you had to go straight to juniors as a 17-year-old. And so the intermediate league, a lot of people didn't like it, but I thought that experience was pretty awesome from the outside looking in. How did you like that? What did you like about that? And who are some of the players that you played with on that team?
Yeah, it's cool. It's funny. So at around that time, I mentioned Pete Tellis being one of my coaches, and he was the junior A coach this past year. But he was my intermediate coach when I first went out there. And it's funny, I lived at his house while I was also playing for his team. So that was pretty cool. But The funny thing is Pat Coyle was still coaching the junior team. The junior team was really good that year. I think they had Chris Kluche and Berg might've been gone, but they were really deep and they had a ton of really good guys. And then they made a deep Minto run and played against Six Nations and lost. So we had a ton of really good players on our team that were just a little too young to make that team. So our team was full of like Reed Bowering, who was NLL rookie of the year, runner up maybe. Defender, mm-hmm. But he's unbelievable pro career so far. We had Christian Del Bianco, who was actually playing junior at the time, but wanted to play with his buddies. So he came down and stayed to play with his buddies. Ethan Tysers was on the team, who's having a great pro career in Calgary right now. I don't know, just tons and tons of guys who we had a great time too. And it was a ton of fun. And like you mentioned, I was going to go out there for 1 year and ended up just having the most fun summer of lacrosse and just teammates having fun culture up there. And ended up just staying West Coast for the next 5 years after that as well.
Talk a little bit about the culture of box lacrosse, because I feel like it's a little different than field. And it's not that you don't have, it's just as many buddies in field and stuff, but I feel like kind of like the difference is, you know, the dressing room itself actually probably makes a pretty big difference in just being able to hang out. But what would talk a little bit about the culture of box and how it's sort of impacted you as a player, as a teammate, and now as a coach.
Yeah, I think the culture is really cool. And I would argue too that It was awesome in Coquitlam, and where I got to play junior A lacrosse was one of the best cultures there are. And there's a couple others that are really cool and unique, whether it's Orangeville or Six Nations. But I think Coquitlam's right up there, Victoria. But I would say Coquitlam's right up there with the best of them. And it's really just a product of everything they have. So whether it starts at the front office did an awesome job, and they took care of the billets who were coming in and living there, and they took care of the players. And it was a first-class experience when we travel out to the Mentos and to the coaches. And they always had top-tier coaches, whether it's Pat Coyle or whatnot. Jason Bishop, who's the assistant, who's awesome. And then to your point of the dressing room, it's a lot of like hockey culture. And I think that's pretty cool and unique. And the hockey guys, so many junior hockey, it's just long, long bus trips. And you just spend so much time with your team. And so many of those guys have similar backgrounds of growing up in hockey and just really good teammates who care about each other. And it's funny, it's kind of like college lacrosse without school and less practice. And so it's like you get a chance to be really close with your teammates. And it's a ton of fun. And whether it's ferry trips or playing 20 games in the summer and really competing. But yeah, it's a really cool culture and a product, I'd say, of kind of the top down and just kind of being first class. And it just made it awesome up there. So
the one really cool thing, too, I feel like is that, you know, that's similar between St. Catharines and Coquitlam is just from a community perspective, everybody just loves lacrosse. They love box lacrosse. And it's, you know, everybody wants to talk about box lacrosse.
Yeah,
it's just
for sure.
And that. It's amazing.
Yeah. And something I didn't even mention is like there's four outdoor boxes in Coquitlam itself. So there's kids, you walk on Saturday afternoon to any of those boxes, there's kids playing there. There's junior guys playing there, and there's guys who played junior there are playing pro now, and they're just kind of stopping by. And you get that culture of generations and generations. And I think that's why Coquitlam made 10 straight Minto Cups, is just being able to have the older guys know the approach you have to take and the younger guys kind of following suit and the younger kids looking up and seeing all that happen. And it's just kind of going over and over and over over years and years. So I think, yeah, definitely plays a part of it. And just, yeah, the town loves it. You talk to people, oh, where are you from? Denver. What are you doing here? I'm playing for the Adnacks. Everyone's like, oh, that's awesome. And super supportive. So it was awesome up there.
That is cool. I think there's something unique too about the Canadian box lacrosse. And it's probably similar to like NHL hockey playoffs in that, you know, like you go through the regular season, but then when the playoffs hit, you got series. And I feel like it really, it ramps up this level of competitiveness. And it really gives an experience of playing in a lot of big games. And the fact that they're series instead of just one shot playoff games is kind of cool too. Can you talk a little bit about how sick it was to play in the playoffs and to make Minto runs?
Yeah, it's funny because as you kind of get through and as I was in college, you got a lot of guys coming to the team late. You probably play 5, 6, 7 games out of 20 games without your full lineup because guys are away at school, kind of getting trickling back in. And you play, I'd say, the last 12, 13 games of the regular season. There's a trade deadline down July 1st, which is usually towards the end of the regular season. So you usually pick up some new guys late. And then the playoffs feels like a whole different thing. And it's super competitive, both within the province, within kind of Canada itself, but even within the team. Like the really good teams you play on, you don't win championships like that without having really good players who don't play every night and having guys get scratched and stuff. But again, to the point of culture that we just talked about, is you have to understand that's how you're going to win. And can you be a good teammate, whether you're in the lineup or you're not in the lineup, and supportive of your guys out of the lineup, or if they go in for you, and all that stuff is super important. But yeah, just playing against in a best of seven or a best of five against teams and getting to play in crowded playoff games, and whether they're going to try to take you off your game by beating you up or whatnot or whatever it might be, but just to see the same thing over and over and over and to make adjustments and know exactly what guys you're going against and who's going to be trying to cover you every night or whatnot. And you run into hot goalie and trying to make those adjustments is really cool and fun.
Yeah. So cool. 2016, you guys played in the Minto Cup in Langley, went in as a second seed in the West, and ended up winning the championship in game 5 in overtime. something yep. like 5-4, something like that. Can you talk a little bit about that first Minto run and what it was like?
Yeah. Yeah. So that year was awesome. And it was, I remember I was pretty young. I want to say I was 16, maybe 17, but I was young. And my captain of that team was Tyler Pace. And like I said, guys come late from schools, and he was at DU at the time, and they'd won the championship the year before. And being a Colorado kid, I was in high school. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I remember him coming to the dressing room for the first time and just kind of a little starstruck, not nothing crazy, but and then again, like we talked about the college year, within like a week or two, like we're good friends and we're buddies and we're competing together every night. So that year was really cool and fun. And my first time I felt like I was playing like big time lacrosse was that summer. And we went through the playoff run, which was awesome. And I forget who we played in the first round, but like you said, we played Delta in the final round. And I remember that was they just tried to bully us, and that's how they tried to beat us, and they did a little bit, and they kind of got on our skin. And I actually remember I got banged up in that game and didn't dress in game three, and I was all kind of bent out of shape about it. But again, to my point earlier, is you got to be supportive and kind of go. And we ended up losing that series and going into the Minto with a little bit of a chip on our shoulder, knowing luckily that we still got in. And it was a short series because we were hosting the Minto, so they only did a best of three, so we still could have kind of came back, but it was tough. They had a really good team, and they were tough, and they had like the kid Tyrell Hammer Jackson, who's a pro right now. I think Trey LeClaire was on that team, if I remember correctly. Ken Milligan, so they had a bunch of good guys on that squad. And then, so I remember too, is you made me come back for high school, which high school had already started for 2 weeks. There's about a 2-week break between that series and the Minto, and my mom and dad, and obviously you guys are like, all right, you're coming back to high school. And I didn't, I was like so bent out of shape on that too. I didn't want to come back, but came back and went to school for a couple of weeks, and I was working out. And I remember too, you were like, whatever you do, don't go play basketball. Like, you can't play basketball. And I go with my buddies, play basketball, and sprain my ankle. I'm so bad. And so that was, so I spent the next week and a half just like gearing up, like prepping my ankle, working really hard to get that thing. And then we went down, I flew back for the Minto. The ankle was feeling pretty good. We had an awesome run at it. And we actually, I think we beat, on the first night we beat Orangeville, which was a big, they had a really good team. They were deep and they were good. And
they had like Joel Tinney, Charlon Beattie's.
Yeah. And Charlon Beattie's was probably the best player on the floor, except for our goalie played a little bit better. And those two, really to watch those two compete was really incredible. But we won that first game. And then beat my old teammate, Jordan Prisco, who was playing for Calgary at the time. So we beat those guys. And then somehow Delta had slipped up. So we already had our ticket punch. So we played those guys. They ended up beating us again. We scratched some guys and rested some guys because we knew we were going to advance anyways. But they, again, they out-toughed us and they banged some guys up and they were real physical with us. Then we got into the best of five finals against Orangeville, and it was awesome. Like I said, Charlon Beattie's was unbelievable player in that series, and Del Bianco was just as good. And Gilray for them was awesome, off the charts. Yeah. And they were deep and good. And it went into a five-game series in overtime, which was, you can't ask for much more. And I'll never forget Pat Coyle, who came in before overtime. We were kind of upset because we blew a lead. And he's like, you know what, guy, like, if I told you back when we started this thing a couple months ago, we said you get one period to go play to win it. Like, let's go play this period. Like, who cares? They scored, they took it. And so it was awesome. It was a fun series to be a part of. Yeah, something I'll never forget. And even we talked about the generations, but watching all the alumni who were pro guys, and I watched kind of growing up being in the stands wearing jerseys and helmets and banging on the glass going crazy. It's just, I don't know, just memories. All of us remember. It's pretty sweet.
The only bad thing is I made us get on a flight the next morning relatively early to go back to school.
Yeah, that was, I was also bent out of shape about that one too. But yeah, I had to go back to school. Yeah.
For people that don't know, the format of the Minto is basically the winner of the West, the winner of Alberta, and the winner of Ontario all punch a ticket to the Minto, and the second place finisher of the host province get to play. They play a round robin where everybody plays each other. The first seed gets a bye, the last seed is out, and then two plays three in a semifinal to make it to the five-game series. And so you guys win in overtime of game five. Delves actually almost won it. Remember?
And we always joke, thank God he didn't. So our goalie, who I keep talking about, was unbelievable, had an unbelievable series. And it was the lowest scoring game possible. And there's a big fight that their goalie got upset with me and tackled me, and everyone started fighting. I was yawning. Oh, my God, what did I do here? I didn't mean to start that. But right at the end of the regulation, they pulled their goalie, and Del Bianco made an unbelievable save and chucks it the length of the floor, and it probably missed by about 2 inches high of the crossbar. And like, he almost sealed it, but we always joke, like, thank God he didn't, because he pretty much won us the Minto with all the saves he made, but thank God he didn't actually win it by scoring the game winning goal. The offense could take care of that one.
So 2017, you guys go back to the Minto, and Six Nations was just too good. Remember how good those guys were?
They swept us. That was a tough one for us, but they were pretty off the charts. And you look at their lineup now of guys they had, and still kind of going.
They're all playing. Austin Stotts was probably MVP of that.
Yeah.
Minto.
Yeah, Dougie Jameson was off the charts. Travis Longboat was really, really good. Tohoga was really, really good. Cam Garland.
Right.
Holden Garland,
yeah. And then 2018, you guys go back and get to play. And to sort of summarize that one, it was in Calgary. So there were two teams from Alberta that made it, but it was pretty much going to be you guys in Brampton. Jeff Teat was the best player in junior lacrosse that year. And he had, except for Delps maybe, but the best runner probably. And he had 14 goals and 14 assists in the three games going into the Minto final. But then you guys end up winning the championship. But first of all, you won game one, and there was just like a crazy episode that we're not going to dive into right now, but yeah. I'll say that was one of the most incredible sporting events ever. So yeah, that's cool. Talk to me a little bit about what you learned from Pat. You know, what are some of the things that you take now that you learned specifically from Pat Coyle, the head coach?
Yeah. So Pat's been crazy influential, as you know, kind of on my career and through kind of whether it's been interviews for coaching jobs or anything else. And people always ask me about kind of some of the most influential coaches. I always bring Pat up at some point and just because he's tough. And it's funny, as a player, he was the toughest guy out there. And if you watch, he was the last player to not wear a helmet. Like, he's grandfathered in, and finally like, dude, you have to put a helmet on. This is ridiculous.
So you just mask?
Helmet. What?
You mean a mask?
It might have been mask, yeah. But he just – it was crazy. And he got suspended from the league, and then they folded – or merged into the NLL, so he got welcomed back. But he was just nuts as a player. But he was tough, and he was always team first. And that was one of the big things. He always was team first. And as a coach, he was awesome, and he was tough on us. And he would get after guys, and he would scratch you, and he'd kind of let you know what he thinks. But the one thing that he always came back to, and obviously I learned a ton of things of skill wise, whether it be that kind of check where you open a guy's chest up and push him over, or the way he talks about defense and we force people down and rotate across the top and play a really unique style of defense. But the one thing I always come back to is the mindset and how he would get our teams to stay in the moment, play together, be in the moment at all times. And don't get me wrong, everyone who's played for him knows, like, he'll rip you, he'll get after you and tell you what he thinks. But our teams were always in the moment. We had a phrase and we would say, what's next? And we'd score a goal, like a big, big goal. And we'd celebrate for 5-6 seconds. And then it'd be like, what's next? We're going, like, we got to keep going and playing. We'd take a penalty and it'd be what's next. And we'd, whatever it was, is no matter what the situation was, we just moved on to the next moment. And we got 20 guys and plus the 6-7 in the stands, all kind of on the same page with that. And it was really hard for us to beat because, like I talked about in 2016, and we kind of got beat with teams trying to be more physical and whatever, out tough us. But when you have a different mindset like that and you can keep your mind in the moment and all that stuff, and it comes from the top down, it's really powerful and really tough to beat. And it's something that I'll keep taking with my teams in the future, and something that I give a big credit of our winning to that approach that he got our team playing with and everybody to buy into.
Yeah. Amazing. One thing that I noticed about Coquitlam over the years was just how well you guys moved the ball. You had multiple offensive coordinators that you played for in Coquitlam, but the common denominator was just unbelievable passing. You guys would swing it, you'd move it. The ball wasn't dying in one person's stick. And I feel like that just opened up the opportunity for for so many things. How has that influenced your coaching, and what are some of the other things you learned from your experiences in box that are translating now into your field coaching?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, a lot of the same concepts that we talk about in box are the same way we're kind of talking about coaching, whether you can swing the ball from side to side to make the goalies move. If you run into a hot goalie, can you shoot it off the catch, which essentially is going to make him harder to be in rhythm if he's got to move before he sets it up. The way we talked a ton about entering the floor, and you have to go in fast and tough. And the same thing we talk about with our teams of, if you're coming off and there's like transition moments, like, you got to cut hard and draw people down, because not only will you maybe get open, but it's going to open up people behind you, and cut to get other people open as well as cut to get yourself open is something we talk about with our team all the time. So how can we keep like flying around? It's funny, because towards the end of my, not my junior career, but I played senior A in Langley, which I touched on, and I played offense for most of the year. Down the stretch of the year, I played defense. And what I realized is defense is way less tiring, because in offense, you have to move around. And they were so key on us flying around and always moving and moving to get other people open as well as ourselves, and moving the ball and moving our feet and all this different stuff, which is exhausting. And then just like little things too, of like the way we would hustle on and off the floor. Like I talked about on the floor, but we'd have to be smart and hustle off the floor and read the situation, similar to riding in field lacrosse. And we'd have to kind of read those situations. And we were really smart and crafty with the way we came on and off. And then to your point, we moved the ball and we did a great job of that. And he, there's like these nuances to picks that he would talk about all the time, which there's a million of them. It's, I probably can't get into all of them right now, but he would teach us the nuances and we'd do them. But everything really revolved around like getting through the middle, going hard, drawing people to open up other people, coming on and off the floor. And that was kind of the central of everything. So,
yeah, really cool. What about from a skill development perspective? I mean, I know you sort of say like, we don't practice that much, but I feel like the reps that you did get in practice, first of all, were incredibly, I kind of feel like box time is like double time. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like you could practice less, but get more out of it. Yeah. How would you say from a player development perspective, box lacrosse has impacted you in your coaching and teaching?
Yeah, well, I would say we didn't practice much. We did practice in junior A. We practiced more than a lot of teams, especially in the West. You practice a little more than the teams in the East. The East play a few more games. They got to travel longer. The West, it's a little closer, and we could practice more. So we were out there once or twice a week, depending, probably more often than not twice a week. We're out there practicing with 2 to 3 games a week as well. But yeah, I would say it was just – everything was a decision making in practice, and it was really tough to score on the goalie. And for me personally, I've mentioned him a bunch, but he's the best goalie in Canada probably right now still. And he was our goalie that we got to shoot on every day in practice and every day in warm up. So that alone was awesome for learning how to score, and really not just shooting to shoot, but you got to shoot to score, and you got to figure out new creative ways to score. Because if you have 2 or 3 moves, you might be good for a week and a half, but a week and a half later, you're not scoring those moves anymore, as he knows exactly what's coming. So you got to constantly develop and constantly work. And then, and I give a lot of credit too, to like the ways in general, right? And ways defensive plays you can promote different things or not. And if you play for a team that slides a lot in field lacrosse, and your guys will probably naturally be better at passing. So I think that's massively true. And the way we played defense in Coquitlam, again, probably promoted passing, but it also de-promoted carries, because they would force us down to the corners, and we would have to, instead of flipping it back, like face dodge over and flip it back, they would time that up and kill you. So you'd have to roll your back and look to skip it through and be more creative with different ways you can look, opposed to things that people just kind of grow up. So I'd say the way we ran our defense made it definitely helped our skill development in the different reads that we have. And then just the goalies and the nature of the game of how many touches you get, and just being in the box and constantly getting breakaways and having to squeeze balls into tight windows and actually having to catch it, right? It's funny, because I always say in box lacrosse, you watch it and you watch a really skilled guy, he probably drops it a couple times a game, but there's a lot of really, really tough passes that he has to handle or catch too. And so being able to handle more often than not, and pick up tough balls against the wall and read bounces and all that stuff, I think is really interesting and cool.
Yeah. I think the amazing thing too was like how much lacrosse you ended up getting to play because you went on these deep runs, you know, whereas the rest of Canada is kind of done by, you know, mid July. A lot of times you guys weren't finishing up until like the end of August. I mean, you were late to college. You were late to your first year of college. You were, you know, had to leave high school, late to your second year of college,
yeah,
late to your third year.
Yeah.
Much, right? And, yeah, and the amount of lacrosse that you played, and plus like the warm up. I mean, I feel like it was just amazing to go watch, like you guys would go out, you know, on game day, you'd have a shoot around in the morning, and then you'd have like, you know, a warm up where you're just like shooting a gazillion balls on delves to warm up before the game, before warm up. And then you come out for the real warm up. And I just kind of thought about just how, one of the reasons why the Canadians are such good shooters is obviously the small nets and the big goalies, but just how much you guys shot was like pretty off the charts.
Yeah, for sure. And to your point of those deep runs, it's, and that probably comes back to the culture piece too. And for us to get a couple extra months, I'll never forget. Tyler Pace said to me, he's like, I can't imagine how the hockey players do it. It's like for us to play the full field lacrosse season and then go play it through August in the summer, it's like crazy on your bodies. And we're playing junior lacrosse. Like, I can't imagine what the NHL guys to do like four of those seven game series and have to go to game seven, game seven, game seven, game seven, year after year after year. It must take a toll on your body. But to your point of warmups and all that stuff is, yeah, it was awesome. It was tons of fun. And down the stretch of those seasons, you just kind of go out there and shoot at the very beginning because it's tough to move. You play every night for four or five nights in a row. It's tough on the body, and it takes a while to get warmed up. But by the time your full team comes out and you got your pads on, you kind of zip the ball around. But, yeah, and I don't know, even when I'm coaching these showcases and camps and stuff, I see and we do like a star drill. And people struggle. That's something that from the time you're a peewee up there, you're one time in your star drill and it's dialed in and you get an end with a shot on the goalie and your hands get locked and quick because everyone does it. And whether it's 3-on-2s and 4-on-3s and just kind of the staple warm-up drills that kids will go all the way through are awesome touches that they get just purely in warm-ups throughout their whole entire careers.
One thing cool too, I was just popped into my head is just I was thinking about, you know, 3-on-2s and how often you with 3-on-2s, it's not like your classic, like West Jenny, where you have, you know, you can take all the time in the world you want. Usually the 3-on-2s you guys are doing are like usually with speed, you know what I mean? And handling the ball and being able to make a play at speed. And I feel like that's one thing that happens a lot in boxes. You're handling the ball, getting up and down, and you're throwing the ball hard in like tight windows and stuff. And how have you tried to get that going with, you know, with where you are now?
Yeah, we do a ton of stuff. We try to do tons of decision making, everything with speed, and we'll even do like if we're doing say like a 2-on-1 drill, maybe it's we'll use like small nets and tennis balls and do some 2-on-1s, but we'll make sure you're coming in at speed, and we'll throw the ball deep and far, and that guy's got to come in and handle at speed because it is really important. And to my point earlier of it's easier to score an assisted shot, it's easier in if you kind of loop it to somebody, it's gives everybody more time to make it happen. If you throw it hard and get it there and play faster, you're running fast. That makes a huge difference. And that's why in the box, you get a lot of like those backside one timers. You have to throw it fast and beat the goalie across while he's trying to step. He doesn't have that far to go. And so you got to beat him there. But yeah, speed is huge. We try to do everything at speed and we try to keep our guys fresh as possible. So when they're coming into the drill, they're going with speed and stuff like that. So we're definitely something we're working on big time.
So last summer, you, after the, a couple of year hiatus because of the pandemic, you went up and played senior lacrosse for Langley, and you mentioned some of the great players and you've touched on a few great players along the way, but talk to me a little bit about, you know, what you learned from some of those guys. What did you learn from Curtis Dixon and Dane Doby and Robert Church? What are some of the things that you sort of took away that you, you know, maybe helped you as a player and help you as now as a coach?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing is just like deception is everything, right? And when I'm feeding Doby balls, he'll literally look away from me to catch it. And you can see it when you slow down the film, he just turns his head the complete other way. So his defender doesn't know it's coming. And he's old and I don't know, but he's still playing like nobody can cover him. And to watch that guy play is pretty incredible. And He's not the most athletic in the world, but his hands are so fast and everything's calculated, whether it's where his hands are as he cuts the middle, or it's how he's going to shield his defender off as he inside rolls, or how he's going to finish or set the goalie up as he finishes and where to put it, or how he's going to pick this guy to get him open. Everything's calculated. And I was lucky enough to do a webinar for him on the Virtual Lacrosse Summit, which was pretty awesome. But I was hosting and Dobie was on. And he just talked about, like, even I'm watching my defender's hips, and as soon as they turn this way, I know we've got him. And just the IQ on that guy and how calculated he is really, really impressive. And same with Curtis, and those guys are totally different players, but they're both incredible to watch. And Curtis is so athletic, and the way he can drag and hold defenders covering him for as long as possible and make people overplay him is really incredible. And Church too is unbelievable. He's different than all those guys. He's more of a quick release, and he's got a little bit of burst in him, and he picks his times to burst, and he doesn't always burst, but when he bursts, he's pretty much gone always. And the way he shoots it and quick release. And it's funny, people always say it's not the wand, it's the magician. And I was always like, yeah, but you need a good stick. And then I watched like Dobie pull a stick out of his bag that has been sitting in his bag for 3 months and is bent and like the worst stick ever. And he just scores 6 goals. So maybe it really is the magician, not the wand, but yeah, playing with those guys was really, really cool. And just to learn things that they've learned in their career. And so it's been awesome. It was really cool.
That is so cool. What did you learn from those guys from a two-man game perspective that was different than juniors?
I wouldn't say a ton. I don't know. I probably could have done a better job in my one season with them kind of inquiring about some of that stuff. And part of the reason too is I think Pat gave me a really, really good sense of two-man game. And I felt like I was pretty advanced in my two-man game and I was going. And not to mention when I was playing on that team, they weren't picking for me very much. I was picking for those guys because those guys were going to handle the ball more so than me, which is great. That's the way it should be when you're playing with guys like that. So I was doing a lot of the picking, but it wasn't a ton. The biggest thing is kind of find backs and know when to jack a guy and know when to kind of like push them and try to get them to take a couple steps opposed to purely pop them with a cross check. But some timing stuff and how to kind of time it up and what to look for, or maybe set a bee sting or stuff like that. But
yeah,
I'd say a lot of my knowledge from the two-man game perspective kind of came from Pat and Jason Bishop and those guys talking about the different two-man game stuff.
Love it. Well, let's talk a little college lacrosse and some of the things that you learned along the way at Carolina and Georgetown before we move into Providence.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved my time at both those places, and I don't regret any of my time, whether it's Carolina. I know I ended up transferring, but loved my time there, and I loved my time at Georgetown as well, and to play with some unbelievable players there and a couple playoff appearances. Probably wish I could have had a couple more, but yeah, it was awesome. And those two places were totally different, but they were the same in a lot of ways, and the guys were the same and everything like that, but I don't know, just some subtle differences of kind of the way we practice. And I wouldn't say one is necessarily better or worse than the other, but there was more preparation, I would say, at Carolina. And we were really dialed in kind of everything that we were doing. And Georgetown, we like didn't even play 6-on-6 through the whole fall. And so that was like a little subtle difference. That was just like, I don't know, but it was cool and unique. And just the skill development piece of it, I thought it was awesome. And I know you touched on it with your podcast with Coach Warren, but it's like the 5-on-5 rapid fire drill we would do every single day and really just promote passing and ball movement and do that. But, yeah, it was really cool. And I'd say Coach Metz was awesome. He taught you to kind of like see what's going on and adjust based on what the defense is doing. And we were able to kind of shape what we tried to do based on what those guys were, what the defense was trying to do. And Coach Phipps was a little more like, let's kind of roll it out and play in kind of spots, loose spots, and just kind of go and be passing offense and make decisions. And there are a lot of similarities between the two as well, but I'd say those were big differences, but yeah. Again, both places were awesome. I really enjoyed it.
So getting a chance to coach for Bobby Benson was probably a great opportunity. And to be in a first year program is pretty cool too, because it gives you an experience of what it's like, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And that's what I always said. And obviously the goal is to be a head coach one day, and to really see the way Coach Benson approached it, and the work he put in and the work we all put in every single day was really cool. And there's a lot of hurdles that come with the first year head coach. And we always joked, it felt like we were drinking from a fire hose at times, because there's just so much you got to figure out, whether it's how to send a package or like what recruits are going to want to come visit and everything in between there. But it was really cool experience. And yeah, I loved it out there.
Talk to us a little bit about the about what you learned from Coach Benson on the offensive side of the ball. What are some of the things that he does and emphasizes that you really like and that you're going to take on to your coaching career elsewhere?
Yeah, the biggest thing is just we're letting the guys be decision makers, and we give them like a loose kind of script, not even a script, but a loose plan of kind of how we want to look. But the coolest thing is the way we played offense. Like obviously we started out of like a set and you have kind of your base, but when it ran really well, you couldn't tell what was going on and the set would look different. And that's when it was really at its best, because the ball movement was fast and the people movement was fast, but not sporadic. It was fast, but under control. And we knew when we didn't overspeed it, because that's what that happened. When we want to play fast with ball movement, want to play fast with cuts and picks and screens and all that type of stuff, it can look really sporadic. So how can we get our guys to slow down while also having the fast ball movement and the fast thinking without being sporadic with the way they were operating, and just kind of the way we approach that, and how everything's a, you could do this, you could do that, you don't have to do this, you don't have to do that. It's kind of, there's tons of options and flexibility and freedom of the way we play, but we're always going to have the staples of move the ball and get out of each other's way and communicate to each other. And can we communicate to be on the same page all the time? And that stuff was awesome. And yeah, everyone kind of knows, but he's like offensive guru. So getting to work under him was really, really cool.
Great. So now you're at Colgate and you get to run an offense. How do you sort of view it? What's your overall philosophy, would you say?
Yeah, I'd say the first, one of the biggest things is we're passing offense. And obviously you can't always do that, because to my point way early in the podcast is certain defenses promote certain things. Right. And so sometimes you're going to play against a type of defense that makes it a lot tougher to pass, and you're still going to have to do the other stuff, but we're always going to pass first. And we talk about passing to get the ball back. Right. And can you throw it to someone just to throw it back, just for the sake of passing it? Cause more touches is going to be good. And can we know that the ball's always going to come back to us, so we don't have to worry about not moving the ball, because it's going to come back to you. If you get it out of your stick on time and you start moving it, and we create that culture of getting guys moving the ball and really buying into the fact that, you know, it's going to come back around because everybody's bought into the fact that we're going to move the ball. So that's pretty much the overarching thing that we really want to be about. And obviously we're going to dodge, and we're going to pick, and we're going to cut, and we're going to do all these different things and pick away and whatnot. We're going to do tons of stuff, but how are we really going to make sure it's touching the ball? And that's the way I like to play. That's what we talked about in Canada. That's how I was as a player. It's more fun to play, I think, if you're moving the ball and knowing it's going to come back, and you don't have to worry about hanging on to it, cause you know, you're going to touch it again.
Right.
I just think it's more fun to play that way. So seems like our guys are enjoying it as well.
It definitely promotes, you know, a better team, you know, cause it's like, if it's team first, part of that is passing, right? Passing is like one of the biggest keys to team. But what are some of the specifics about passing that are so critical for an offense? If you could like rattle off a few things, like what are the things about passing that impacts the defense that makes it so important for you?
Yeah. Know? I'd say one, it turns everybody's heads and stances, right? And especially maybe throw it through X and get it to the backside or flip, but everybody's stances have to flip. So just throwing it and throwing it back makes, whether you're trying to spider in or help or whatnot, it just gets people moving more so than it would if you don't, or they're accustomed to you just passing it. Now they don't even bother spidering in, because they're going to think you're going to pass it back. Now you kind of fake it and you go, and they might be a half second late. And so how can you get people to move their stances and everything like that? I think you can create advantages through your passing, and you can You can beat people with ball movement, which you always know, and you can't always beat people through ball movement, but you can do it before you even dodge. If there, you see it like a long approach and you can zip it there fast and efficiently, you can get yourself to dodge an approach. I think all that stuff's huge. And then to my point earlier is the goalies have to step and move. And if you're passing completely on rhythm, so maybe you dodge an alley through X to the backside at same alley through X to the backside, then he might be on rhythm too. But now all of a sudden you pass it, dodgy alley and throw it back or whatever, ball reversal at some point. Now you're still passing. It's not quite in the same rhythm. And now his rhythm's off as well. And so he has to move. And I think it can kind of actually help negate a hot goalie as well. So I think those are the three biggest things is, can we get them to shift their stances? Can we actually beat them with ball movement or create an opportunity that we like with our passing, with a hard, efficient pass? And can we score assisted shots? Because not because we have to. And if we have a great opportunity to score unassisted, just like I've mentioned before, if we can find an approach and beat it there with ball movement to dodge the approach, that's probably going to be an unassisted goal, but that's passing that led to the goal. Right. But also can we shoot some assisted shots that are going to help make the goalie move and be off rhythm and help negate hot goalies.
Yeah. And it spreads the defense out too, right?
Yep. Yeah, no doubt.
One of the things I remember from your intermediate year with Pete Talis is he literally wouldn't let you guys feed a pick and roll.
Yeah.
Talk about that concept and why that's so important and how you probably are leveraging that concept even at the level you're at now.
Yeah, no doubt. That is something that's awesome. And you see it. And a lot of box teams do it naturally. And we'll talk about that look. But a lot of teams don't say we're going to do this and that's what we're going to do. And really what it comes down to is just kind of feed the pick and roll. It can be, everyone can rotate and it's obvious that's what you want to do. And people you see in college cross, people pre-rotate. When you swing it across to feed it back to the guy, I think it really makes everything develop slower. So you can realize that, is it going to be open or is it not going to be open, right? Because the defender who's switching on to that guy, he might recover quick. And if you throw it right to the pick and roll, you might be open for a half second, but by the time you get it there, he's going to be recovered. Whereas if you swing it across and back, well, now if he's really open, he's still going to be open. If he wasn't quite that open, he's not going to be open. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I think it makes the angle so much better to catch it and score, because when you feed a pick and roll, say you kind of down pick or something and the guy's carrying over top, if you throw it to the pick and roll, the guy who's rolling, his back is basically to the net and he's catching that thing with his back turned to the net, which is, again, if you're going to rotate up to it, it's tough because your back's to it. You can't see the goal. You might get hit. It's tough. It's kind of like feeding the crease from top center of a man up. You can do it, but it's tough, and it is tough. And so can you catch it? Can you swing it to the other side where now you're catching it on a cut to the middle and you're already running down towards the net, and you can see the people in front of you? And the help has to cover the ball, right? So when you throw it to the other side of the floor, whoever is covering that guy, if you throw it right to the roll, he could probably help and make a play on it in the middle as well. Well, now when you throw it to the other side of the floor, that guy's got to play the ball, and he's not going to get back on time if you throw it back to the original picker on the pick and roll. So that was, yeah, and that's how important I really realized how important hockey assists were. And now I know when you were coaching me in high school, we talked about hockey assists all the time, and I knew that was important, but to really see it like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And in box lacrosse, it's not a hockey assist. You just get an assist for that, and they value that. But yeah, that was huge. That was huge for my just overall ideas of passing and development. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think it's so important too, because if you sit there looking for the pick and roll, you're kind of killing time. And if you just move the ball, the pick and roll will still be there. But by moving it, you might have had an advantage on the other side of a difficult approach of an off ball two man game. And you know, it the ball dies in sticks when someone's just looking to feed their own pick and roll. Whereas if you just keep the ball moving, you swing it or you skip it, they can, like you said, it's a better angle. The guys, if he's open, he's still going to be open, but now you can actually get into the next action immediately and use ball movement to create that advantage. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no doubt. And same thing with if he's not open and you still realize it, that's kind of what we talked about earlier of cutting to get other people open. And so if you're not open and it maybe they did cover it better than you thought, so you thought you might have it, you don't. And now you swing the ball right back to the guy who caught it. There's way more space there before because they had to cover that hard cut, and having to actually just cover that cut opens up tons of space behind it. So I think the whole thing just promotes space and ball movement. And it was really cool idea and way to play for us back then.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about picking. I mean, I know everybody in college across does a lot of on ball picking, and I'm sure you guys will too, but it's to me, one of the new frontiers in field lacrosse is, and you're seeing it more and more and more. Saw it a lot in the PLO, probably more so with Canadians, but there's so much opportunity to get open off ball. Can you talk a little bit about the off ball two man actions that you kind of learned in Canada that in the concepts of those that you're trying to teach in field and basically how you use picks and slips and seals in the course of backside actions, as well as trying to figure out, you know, when you need to be the outlet to be open.
Yeah. So that's something we talk a lot about is always kind of keeping an eye on the ball and knowing when you have to be an outlet. Cause if you're going to be passing, you have to kind of have outlets and you can't get too dialed into your off ball actions where you're not going to have any outlets. So that's definitely something we talk about, but it's same as a player in box. And that's what we would always talk. You want to find backs back there. And if you can find somebody's back and get them to cut, then you're going to be on the same page. And it's really true, similar to the way Coach Benson would talk about it, is you have to be able to not go too fast but still make something happen. And you have to communicate, right? So can I communicate to you that you have to cut off my pick or I'm not going to get open on my pick? Or maybe I'm picking for you to get open, but you still have to cut on it. Or maybe I seal for you, and if you don't recognize what's going on, you're not going to get open. So we have to get on the same page. With all of that. And I think one of the coolest things for the way that we're doing it at Colgate is there's certain things and stuff that we don't even talk about. And our guys are really, really good at doing. And I think that's a product of a couple of things. Of one, the way Coach Carwick's coached it the past couple of years and getting our guys to do some of that thing. So one, you don't have to say, but you always have the group of new guys too. So, but the cool thing is those guys have completely kind of started playing the same way some of the older guys are playing. And I think
what are some of those things?
I think a big one is sealing and just being able to kind of seal people. That's probably the biggest, but those we don't overly talk about it, and our guys are awesome at it. And I know they've talked about it a bunch in the past, but I think it's a product of your environment and kids adapting to their environment. And that's the same way I got good at my on ball and off ball picking up in Canada, is because that was the environment I was in. I think that's the reason our freshmen are pretty good at sealing people, because that's what the older guys are doing. And that's why I think you watch like Jack Hanna plays like a Canadian. He's off the charts. He played in 4 years of practice with a ton of Canadians, and that's the way they played, and those guys developed. So I think the culture of the way you get guys to play will really just kind of help the new guys along and help them start to play kind of the way you want them to play, whether it's movement and passing, cutting, picking, on ball, off ball, whatever it might be. But I think just creating that culture, getting the older guys kind of bought in on it, I think really without even having to overdo it, people will start naturally picking up on what's going on and get good at it themselves. So that's been something that's been super cool and definitely a product of my background and the environment those guys are playing. And I guess to answer your question earlier of what up in Canada made it so like that. And yeah, just finding backs and realizing that we had some guys that were probably more skilled than me, whether it was Larson Sundown or Tyler Pace, or I don't know, we had some really, really skilled guys. And so I got to go be the picker and get people open a lot. And what I realized is when you're getting people open, you're getting yourself open a lot of the times too. So not only did I feel like I was pretty good at getting other people open, I figured out how to use that to get myself open too. So
In field, it seems like a lot of times the seal's there because everyone's kind of packing it in on the backside.
Yeah.
But how often do you get sort of like more man-to-man looks, do you feel like in field, where you can get, you know, the up pick slip, where you might get somebody like actually staying? Are you seeing that at all? Are you seeing defenses on the backside wanted to maintain matchups, or were they all sort of pushing and zoning it up?
Yeah, there are some teams that will maintain matchups. A lot are going to switch, and especially when you're kind of get your off ball action. But you can definitely get people maintaining matchups and kind of get open on the same way, whether it's a seal or an up pick or a down pick on the backside. And you can get people to maintain their matchups, especially if you start doing it with some of your better players who have pulls, and you start picking with those guys, and maybe they're not going to switch, and you're going to get those other guys more wide open. So it's a pretty cool nuance as well.
You talked a lot about, when you talked about your experience with Langley and Dobie and Dixon and those guys, you just said something like deception is everything. How does that impact your philosophy now in team offense and individually? How often do you talk about it? How do you try to emphasize it?
Yeah, we talk about it a ton, whether it's shooting deception or deception on picking. So the way we really phrase it is we talk about the defense is trying to guard you at all times. And if you don't use deception, you're telling them what you're doing. And so why would you ever tell the person who's trying to cover you what you're doing? And that's pretty much sums up what we try to do. But then you can implement it in every facet of the game, whether it's passing, catching, shooting, dodging, picking, everything. There's coming off a pick, literally everything in the game, there should be some sort of deception used. And I don't know, because I really just believe in those Canadian guys that really pointed out of like, why would you ever tell them what you're doing? Because that's their whole goal is to guard what you're doing. And that's the only goal of defense is to guard, whether collectively or individually, they have to guard it. And so to not use deception is almost crazy.
What's an example of how you might use deception in picking?
I don't know, whether you go backdoor cut first or do something else beforehand, right? And so if you can go backdoor before you pick, well, what are they going to do? They're either going to cover your cut or they're going to cover the pick. They can't overplay you to the pick because they got to cover your cut. If they do overplay you to the pick, then you're open. You watch Anthony DeMeo do it a ton, and with Coach Benson's offenses, he didn't necessarily go backdoor, but he'd slip those front door cuts because it's the minute they overplay you to the pick, you're wide open to score. So how can you not just tell them that you're going to pick or disguise it somehow? Is really cool, and it just makes it harder for them because they want to overplay the pick. Because to play a good pick, it's tough, and you got to communicate, and you got to step out. Maybe you're a chipping team, so you got to step out and chip, or maybe you got to switch on contact, which is most teams are like that. And so, all right, well, I got to be ready because if he's coming fast off this pick and there's contact, I'm going to have to jump out and I can't get run over or run by. I'm going to have to jump out. So they want to be ready to go make a play on that. And the minute they do, you're open. And basically, so that would be an example of using your pick to set up your cut, but you can do the same thing using your cut to set up your pick. So,
right. How about off ball? How much deception would you use off ball in box, and how much do you see the opportunities to be deceptive in the way you set picks off ball?
Yeah, I think a little less, but I don't know if this classifies as deception, but being able to find a back, right? So you're in their blind spot, so they don't see it coming, so they can't, you're not being, I don't know, you're not telling them exactly what you're doing because they don't know it's coming. I don't know if it's totally being deceptive, but that's huge. If you can find their back and they don't know you're coming, it's massive. And I guess you got to do something to be in their blind spot, right? So I guess it would be deception. Off ball, you can do it too. It's tricky. And that's the one little nuance is we talked earlier in this podcast about having outlets and promoting the ball movement. So again, you don't want to overdo it to where there's no ball movement, no outlets, but if you can be deceptive on the backside, definitely do that as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Last topic. Let's talk a little bit about man up and talk about, from a man of perspective, what are the things that you took from having played with some of the best players in the world and played a lot of box across, and the Canadians tend to have, they're phenomenal on man up. How do you try to develop your team to sort of be that way? And what are some of the principles, the way you like to teach man up?
Yeah. I'd say the biggest thing kind of comes from you and can you get multiple guys to guard you? Can you get multiple eyes on you? And how can you draw people all the way into your hands where they have a further rotation to go? And I'm big into three threes and stuff like that, but like sneaking the pipes, right? And being able to make the rotations as long and far as possible because you're in. And knowing that the defender has one hand on his stick and he's covering up the inside with one hand on your stick, that's open. You got to be able to throw it to the open guy because that guy is open to score. And they shouldn't be able to, like, if they're going to cover you, they have to cover you. You can't make them split it. You can't let them off the hook by having one hand on your stick kind of helping the inside. You got to be able to throw it into those tight windows and get guys all the way out on you. Because again, like we talked about in the cutting, like one step goes a long way. So can you be one step, like make the defender go one step longer on his rotation? And if a bunch of people do that, it's going to be hard. And the same thing is true. Can you get them to shift their stances? So that's like the ball movement, but that's also when you get it behind, it shifts stances and rotations and stuff. So can you mix that stuff in? But just the Canadian influence of the ball moves fast and it touches people, and they're all very dragged in their hands. If they're getting their shot off quick before the goalie has time to come and set and all that stuff, or use deception to feed the skip pass down, like wind up at the goalie and shoot it to the pipe. And you have to score that way in box across, or else you can't, like, you're not going to be able to not score that way because the goalies are too good. And if you can't, and they take away your angle on your outside shot, and if you can't hold them till the last second and skip it to the back pipe, it's going to be really hard for you to score. And the cool thing about box too is they pick in man up situations, and can you seal and can you kind of come, and that gives it a whole different dynamic. So I don't know. We haven't quite gotten there.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're doing in that regard.
Football, I know.
But it is really cool for those guys to be able to seal and to throw it in and do like a little scissors look where the top guy goes and picks the low guy comes and picks high, and you try to run in the middle and seal it. And I don't know, I think that stuff's cool, which is their influence, but really their biggest influence is how quick can you move the ball and how can you make rotations go as long as possible,
right?
And be open in the lane, right? Because even to my point of the skip pass before, well, that's how you got to score, but what's the defense taught to do? Don't give up the skip pass to the pipe or you're going to give up an empty net goal. And so how can you get just enough to be open for that skip pass where you're still going to be off, or maybe you're more on the wing than right on the pipe, but you're right, still in that skip lane and you still have that net opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's open. If you got a chance to catch the ball, you're open enough to score it.
Yeah. And the only way you're going to get the ball there is by being deceptive. Like you said, wind up like you're going to rip it. I remember watching Tahoka when he was like a bantam, wind up like he was going to shoot it, and he twisted a curveball down to the low lefty for a one timer. And I was like, damn, that was pretty high level for a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
But that's just this kind of stuff. And it's the kind of stuff that you get to learn when you play box. And it's pretty awesome that you get to take it up to Hamilton, New York. So yeah, pretty awesome, man. Well, Colin, this was enjoyable. I really loved having you on. Catch up with you soon. And enjoy the Colgate Cuse basketball game tonight. And we'll check in soon.
Appreciate it.